If you're a fan of immersive audio fiction, you won't want to miss out on these shows from Pakhal Media. The Madness of Chartrullian.
Will this world accept my vision of the future? Or is all of this a mistake?
The Nebulous Saga.
You killed my family.
They killed mine.
And for 10 years, I have been making the Alliance pay.
Tales for Howling at the Full Moon.
It is not my worth that brings me here. It is my calling.
Another day, another chosen one.
To learn more about our shows and find out how to support independent creators, visit PakhalMedia.com.
Welcome to Tales for Howling at the Full Moon, a microfiction anthology podcast with stories ranging from the weird to the whimsical and featuring many of Pakhal Media's good friends and collaborators. The episodes are flash produced and feature stories prompted by and released during a full moon. For this Harvest Moon episode, I'm pulling one from the archives. There's no better way to celebrate the changing of seasons than with a good old-fashioned spooky story, and I just love this collaboration from last year's Kill FM featuring W. Keith Timms with music by Odd Andrews. And stay tuned to the end of the episode for a sneak peek of The Love Talker. Here is I Dare You.
Everyone has that one scene that sticks with them for the rest of their lives. Something that made them turn the other way and left shudders down their spine. The thing that haunts their nightmares. And in those quiet waking moments when all seems lost, it just creeps in. Mine is this one, looking over the edge of the Killarney Bridge. At night, not seeing, but hearing the rush of the water below. Now, I know that's an 88-foot drop, but when you're looking down and all you can see is blackness, and all you can hear is violent churn of the undertow beating the earth, and all you can feel is the gentle vibration of its force, you might as well be bended down to meet it face to face. And on a cold night like this one, the air feels like a ghoulish breath, just to remind you of the river's cruel intentions. It's a spot I keep coming back to and have been ever since I was a boy growing up in this cursed place. It's not the fall from the bridge that kills them. Even on days when the water looks calm, it ain't. And this time of year, it's cold. You hit the water, and if you don't get swept away by the undertow, or sucked down into a whirlpool, or embedded feet first in the mud, you're one of the lucky ones who surface. But you won't survive the swim. It don't matter how strong of a swimmer you are, the river is stronger. Your body might be found by cadaver dogs weeks later, 50 miles downstream. At the very least, giving your loved ones closure. Most of them, they ain't never found. The water is so thick with mud, you can't see your hand in front of your face. And the shape of the river changes frequently to satisfy its many changing moods. They're still down there, somewhere. Gobbled up by hungry forces of nature that we have no right to try to control or understand. I didn't grow up aspiring to be a ranger or anything like that. My degree was in psychology. My hope and intention was to lead people away from the edge, hand them a pamphlet, and see them home safely. I didn't anticipate that my job would end up with me pulling bodies from the water. In 15 years, I pulled up 4 dead, saved 3, and watched 2 go in and never come back up. The question on everyone's mind is, why? Why so many? 44, in fact, is how many stood exactly where I stand right now, a patch of concrete decorated with a feeble chain link fence and a sign with a 1-800 number on it and the promise of a kind soul on the other line who will convince you to go back to whatever broken life you were living and, well, break it less. I can't imagine living a life where I might walk up to this spot with God's eye bearing down, look down into the swirling black hell below, and see it as more inviting than whatever hell I was living. Well, tonight, I might be one step closer to understanding. My shift began like any other. I drove the old truck down the little dirt road to the ranger station at the edge of the water, just a click downstream of the Killarney Bridge. As always, I was 15 minutes early, so I could make a strong-ass pot of coffee. By 5:30 p.m., everyone else is usually out of there, and no amount of common courtesy could compel them to hang around long enough to start a new pot. They won't say it out loud, but they don't want to find themselves tangled up with the ghosts in this place. They leave that to me. Anyway, 12-hour shifts, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., 3 days on, 3 days off, 2 on, 2 off. I spend half my shifts watching a monitor and the little red light that turns on when there's motion detected on the bridge. I spend the other half out on the water. The sun had gone down behind a thick curtain of gray clouds, the kind of sunset that gives you no closure and instills the sense that winter is really just one long day, punctuated by periods of darkness. A cold, colorless time of year, and the time when the most people try to end it all. It had been dark for about an hour. I took Chrissy out for a pass under the bridge and shone the spotlight up into the old ironworks. It's like looking up at the rib cage of a colossus. In its heyday, the bridge was painted a very proud shade of red. Now it was red with rust. I'd be lying if I said I never wished it would just give in to its condition and join the souls it's taken to the bottom of the river. Suddenly, something hit the water, just to Chrissy's starboard side. It hit with enough force to give her a good jolt. I reacted quickly, and I met the hand that emerged from the cold, black water and pulled the boy, not much older than 12 or 13, into the boat. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out where in the world he had come from. I'd just been shining my light up toward the old jumping spot. I didn't see him. Not motion sensors, not nothing. Yet, here he was. And he seemed just as confused as I was. The shock of the cold water can certainly do that to you. I wrapped him in a wool blanket and did what I could to help him regain his senses. But nothing seemed to be getting through. We made our way back to the ranger station, and I made the kid a cup of hot chocolate, hoping that getting some heat in him would get him talking. It wasn't until I picked up the radio to call the incident in to the police that I heard his voice. A voice so cold and whispery, it might as well have been the wind. "No," he said, in a sad, pleading tone. "I don't want anyone to know." I said, "There's no shame in asking for help, son. Is there anything going on at home that I should know about?" Then continued the standard line of questioning meant to rule out domestic abuse or any need for child and family services intervention. "No," he replied. "I'm just embarrassed. I think I'd really rather just go home." Something in my bones just didn't feel right about the whole thing. But who was I to make assumptions? I was a teenager once, and knowing what I know about those who survive ordeals like this, They ain't likely to do it again. All that added up to my concession. Okay, why don't I just drive you home? That sound good? The boy nodded. And then I let him sit by the heater for a bit and finish his cocoa. As he sat there, I watched him from behind and noticed that he had this strange look about him. He was sitting on his knees with his little feet sticking out behind him, looking a little too big for his scrawny little body. In that position, it was the treads of his shoes that got my attention first. He was wearing chukka boots, which had been in style since I was around his age. And then I noticed that the cut of his jeans was a bit wider than what kids wore these days. My first assumption was that he could be homeschooled, which he dispelled almost as soon as the thought had entered my mind. My backpack. I left it at the top, and it has all my homework, he said. As he spoke, his gaze never left the glowing red metal of the space heater. I couldn't help but feel like I'd seen the kid somewhere before. I was anxious to get him to a safe place because everything about him was sending up red flags all over the place. In hindsight, I should have followed my gut, which was telling me to call the authorities and to hang tight. But my help in nature got the better of me. Why don't we get you home? I asked after a while and loaded him up into the truck. We drove up the dirt road to the bridge above, him wrapped in that gray blanket, eyes straight ahead, saying absolutely nothing. It was a silence I was anxious to break. You like music? I'll turn on whatever you want to listen to.
The Who?
He said.
My mom won't let me listen to it.
So you're into the classics? I asked, making an attempt to lighten his mood.
Classics?
He said, seeming genuinely confused. I didn't run into many kids who listened to The Who these days, at least unironically. The old truck rumbled to a stop near the jumping spots, and I could see the backpack leaning up against the median. I climbed out to get it, and that's when my flight response really kicked in. Every step I took toward it required every ounce of strength I could muster. I knew that backpack. Bright blue, with Superman in his famous pose, flying in to save the day. The one that I had been so jealous of, because Christmas after Christmas went by without one. I looked at it with envy just about every day as a kid, and the back of the head it belonged to. The head of my friend, who I now recognized as Joseph Tarney. Joseph Tarney, who used to come over to my house, and we would listen to my dad's records in the basement, including The Who, because his mother wouldn't allow the influence of the devil in her house. He was sitting in my truck right now, and he was the first soul that the bridge ever took. I fought the urge to vomit as I turned around to see if he was still where I'd left him. The gray blanket lay in a crumpled heap in the passenger seat. Joseph was standing right behind me. He was soaked again as if I'd pulled him from the water only moments ago. I didn't hear him walk up. And at that point, I wasn't convinced that reality had anything to do with it. He opened his mouth and said the words I knew he would say. It came out as a whisper. I dare you. I remember the tragedy as if it was happening again right before my eyes. Us and some other friends went to see the new bridge at night, and I dared each other to jump from one side of the bridge to the other. Back in that day, there was a gap between the lanes. Well, that night, that gap looked a lot smaller than it actually was. Joseph was the first to take the dare, and the last. I remembered how he set that backpack down in that very spot before climbing up and over the railing
And he looked over his shoulder, laughing, before leaping into darkness. We just watched in horror, not fully understanding what we had just witnessed. It took us 20 minutes to ride our bikes to the police station and report the incident. And by that time, there was little hope for any kind of rescue. Joseph's body was never found, which was a weight that the entire town never really recovered from. It was that tragedy that brought me back to Killarney, and one that would likely follow me for the rest of my days. Because I was the one who made the dare. 15 years on the job, and I'd silently hoped to find some closure, that saving others would serve as some sort of redemption. But something in this encounter was vengeful. It's clear that even after all these years, there's no redemption to be had. And I've left myself little else to live for. And now I stand right in the spot from which I watched Joseph take that fatal leap. An old man, tired of living and scared of dying, as that stupid old song goes. I dare you.
I Dare You was written, directed by, and edited by H.M. Ratcliffe, and it starred Dadyuki Timms and featured music by Aud Andrews. Opening music was provided by Alexander Miller. This has been a PacHow Media original production. You can learn more about our other shows, The Madness of Chartreulian and The Nebula Saga, at PacHowlMedia.com. See you next full moon.
I think being out here in the wilderness changes you. God, I hope so. There is evil in the world. I know that very well, but do you think it must be everywhere?
Hello? I'm looking for the hostel.
You should not be here. Hair of red, mark of blood, child of prey. Until you get you gone.
I met someone, little bird. Strong arms, full lips, a voice so soothing and sweet.
What happens to them? To the women?
I love the way he talks.
Most go missing. Some go mad, but you know, by the time he's finished talking to them, they want to go with him.
You mean like a serial killer?
You are cursed more than you know.
Tear you up and face you back to the mountain!
No one stops the murders from happening, and they want to kill me because I know.
I will not let anything hurt you.
And so you die upon this mountain tonight.
Mothers keep us, but they'll come.
We don't say his name.
Mother Mary or Medicine.
They call him the gentleman.
Mother Bridget bring fire to our skins.
Jarfly Man, the Gankana.
Mother Easter raise us from the soil again.
The Love Talker.
Mothers keep us, but the devil come.
Maybe coming out here will show me who I really am.
The Love Talker is a folk horror fiction podcast launching October 25th. For more information, visit thelovetalker.com.